Hello, gentlemen. So you might have noticed there's quite a range of experience in the talkers between Abaya, Mahamati, Arloka, and myself. There's order members who've been ordained a long time and those ordained quite recently. So it feels slightly strange to be sort of doing this talk in such esteemed company with the other speakers. But I'm very happy to as well, because I'm going to talk about having a connection with Bante, about how to have a connection with Bante, how to create a connection. I'll be talking a bit about my connection with Bante as well. So my experience of knowing Bante is probably closer to most of you in the room, in terms of Surata, Abaya, Mahamati, have known Bante a very long time. But not all of you, but probably most of you here, certainly the many of us for ordination, won't have that depth of sort of personal contact with Bante, particularly that Abaya has had. So my connection with Bante is probably nearer the range of your connection, if that makes sense. So I was ordained by Sardaloka in 2008. So Sardaloka was ordained by Bante. I was ordained by Sardaloka, so I'm a disciple of a disciple of Bante's. And also, I believe there are disciples of disciples of disciples of Bante's around, those preceptors who were ordained by Subhuti. It starts getting a bit Monty Pythonish after that, and you're going disciple of disciple of disciple of disciple. So there's in the order there's a huge range of depth of contact, of personal contact that people have had with Bante. And I was thinking that as time sort of marches on, people coming into the movement, and even the order having much less personal contact with Bante. When I'm saying personal, just to clarify, I'm talking about the kind of contact that Abaya was talking about in the early days, one-to-one, sort of man-to-man contact. So that's happening, obviously, much less. And I mean, I was just fascinated and very grateful to hear Abaya's stories of those very early days. And I thought it was particularly interesting how he said that within 7 or 8 years it had become quite difficult to spend that sort of longer periods of personal time with Bante, which is around the sort of early 70s. But if you look at the order in the early 70s, it was tiny even then. But it's interesting that Abaya was aware that even then it was difficult to get that, to maintain that personal contact, because there are much more people coming into the movement. So over time, Bante's taken a much less central role in the movement, due to him handing his responsibilities on, due to his, more recently, his health and his old age. And I've been quite aware that when doing, I moved from the Nottingham Buddhist Centre beginning of January last year. But I was quite aware, certainly in the last couple of years in Nottingham, how, particularly on the beginners courses, that people coming into the centre were most probably never going to see Bante, you know, even catch a glimpse of him. I mean, they might do, of course. But I was just aware that as time was moving on, it's becoming less and less likely that people would see Bante. And even in my study group, actually, there's a range of experiences. We've got Arya Chittu, who's ordained by Bante, and Mike, who hasn't seen Bante. So they're already quite a range of experience. But for some reason, I felt quite aware of this. I suppose because I feel Bante's, you know, just to say from the outset, this will become clear, but Banter is a very important in my life, and I imagine it's important in the life of all order members. But speaking personally, I feel he's a very important person in my life. But I was quite aware that as people have come into the movement, like I'm saying, they're less likely to see Bante. And I took a quite a few of us from Nottingham a couple of years ago went to see Bante. He was doing it was maybe 2012, 2013. He was doing a book launch in Birmingham for his book on, what's it, meditation, Buddhist meditation, its purpose, the purpose and practice of Buddhist meditation, which is the book that, which is a fantastic book. If you haven't got it, just buy it. You might have to race to the shop, bookshop, because there's probably not that many in there, but do buy that book. It's quite amazing. So I took about 8 people to the Birmingham Buddhist Centre to see Bante, to see him do this book launch. So we organised the cars, we all turned up. There was quite a few people about, and I was just so excited. I'm always excited to see Bante, to just cast my eyes on him, but also excited that I could bring these mitras to see Bante. And I was talking to Aparajita, and he said, oh, Bante can't make it. He's not slept well. So he's not feeling good today. So he's had to cancel coming. And I felt very keenly aware that for the 8 people that I'd brought, I felt, oh, that's it. They won't see Bante now. Because it seemed so unlikely that he would be doing... I felt it was quite unlikely. It was quite unusual that he was doing a public appearance, because he's done less of them. Because of his age and health. But I just had this very vivid sense that, oh, that's it. These guys, they won't see Bante now. Of course, just to say, people can at any point still make, organise to go and see Bante at Adishtana. And as you heard from Mahamati, apparently he's quite well at the moment, so... You know, it's a good opportunity to try and go and see him. But it was more what that symbolised, the fact that I knew some of those people were unlikely to... there's one person I've got in mind, I thought they're unlikely to ask for ordination. And I felt that they're very unlikely to see Bante now. So it just felt, it seemed quite striking in a way. So... Bante being less available in person, of course, doesn't mean that he's having any less effect on people's lives. And I suppose this is the main theme of the talk here, is although we can't see Bante in person, it doesn't mean he's not going to have a central effect on your lives. There's also... It also doesn't mean that we can't meet Bante in many other mediums in a way, which I'll go into a little bit later about the different ways of contacting Bante. I just want to give a little brief story that I was struck by. So this is a friend of mine. He's a Mitra who's asked for ordination. Excuse me. For some reason, because of the free Buddhist audio thing, I don't like saying people's names when talks are being recorded. I don't know why. Anyway, my friend Mark in Nottingham. There you go. I hope you're listening, Mark. I did tell him I was going to put this into the talk. So Mark's a Mitra, he's asked for ordination. I really love Mark. He's full of energy and enthusiasm. He's a lovely guy. He's got a very, very vivid... very lucid dream life. He quite regularly from very early ages had lucid dreams, and is quite adept at sort of engaging, you know, on a conscious level in his dream life, which I would love to do, but I can hardly remember any dreams, so I've given up on that one. But he went to see, he organised to go and see Bante at Adishtana. So he was telling me this, and I asked him if he'd just write to me and tell me exactly what happened, because I wanted to share it with you. So Mark asked for ordination, lucid dream life, wants to go and see Bhante. It's just a brief story. While visiting Adistana, I wanted to try and meet Bhante in person and pass on my immense gratitude. Unfortunately, his sleep was unsettled due to a stormy night, so he was unable to accept any visitors. That morning, I walked through the temporary Bhante exhibition, listening to his memoirs through the decades and absorbing the enormity and wonder of his life. As I walked through the courtyard and past his annex, I fleetingly glimpsed him with his cardigan slowly passing the window. That moment, it was like seeing my hero in person, and I felt a great deal of love. I feel immensely privileged to be a part of his vision and legacy, to the point that my initial disappointment to not being able to speak to him in person fell away. I realised that I have not only met Bhante through his teachings, but that I am connected to Bhante far more deeply than on a physical level. I know I will continue to see Bhante in my dreams. I've spoken to Mark about this, and he said to me on a few occasions he's met Bhante in his dreams. I don't mean he's met Bhante on the astral plane and or anything sort of like that, and I'm sure Bhante wouldn't know who on earth Mark was if he said, you know, the bald guy with glasses that you see in your dreams. I'm sure he wouldn't know who that was. Sorry, Mark. But I was just fascinated with that he's got a very vivid sense of Bhante through lots of other mediums, but one particularly in his dream life. I just really loved that. So that would, to me, was just a really kind of rich example of a connection with Bhante. So he turns up at Adistana, he can't see Bhante. He just catches this glimpse of him, feels immense gratitude, and yeah, I know I will continue to see Bhante in my dreams. I was just very moved by that. So I'll talk about how I've got to know Bhante. So I'm going to talk firstly about my actual contact with him, the sort of my direct sort of being in the same space as him, most of which has been in group situations and 2 one-to-one meetings. But maybe for those of you that are fairly new to the ordination process, I'll just give you a little bit of background. So I came along in 1998, so this is from 98 to now. So I met him at Nottingham Buddhist Centre on a few occasions when he'd come to do book launches. I think he's done 2 or 3 book launches there, and he would, a couple of occasions, he came up to eat with the community when I was, once when I was living there and once when I came to visit. I've taken a group of mitras over to see Bhante in Moseley at Majumaloka, and we had afternoon tea with him, which was delightful. I think that's happened 3 times, actually. Twice with Jinaraja, and once I myself took some mitras over. I've seen him a few occasions at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre, maybe just a couple of occasions. Saw him do a talk there once. And 2 one-to-one meetings. So I'm just going to mention one of these one-to-one. Well, I mentioned both of the one-to-one meetings, actually. So the first one, was quite awkward. I felt quite terrified, and I wanted to crawl out of the room without him noticing, which obviously wasn't going to happen. So this was 2007, just before the year before I was ordained. I arranged to see Bhante. I felt I had some sort of momentum with my practice, and I wanted to go and see Bhante, and I felt in a place where I would be able to meet him, so to speak. So Jinaraja told me before I went, Jinaraja was ordained by Bhante and has got a good connection with him. He told me before I went, he said, he tried to give me some tips and advice about how to engage with Bhante. And I sort of dismissed him. I said, I know how to engage with people. You know, I'd done quite a bit of social work. I was good at the centre with any old crazy who'd walk in the door. I felt quite confident communicating with people. I never felt that was really an issue. And as I was moving, I think I had my invite to Gukyaloka, and you know, had an effective practice gathering and felt quite sorted out, you know, So Jinnu, I just said, oh, this is what you could talk about, or this is what you do. And I said, and I listened, I just thought, I'll be fine, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'll be fine. Before I went in, I started to get really nervous. I was waking up Majjhima Loka, and I just remember in one of the little rooms on my own, just kind of, you know, looking at the clock every 3 seconds. So I went in to see him. After a few short minutes, I seemed to freeze. I became very tense and just didn't know what to do. It's like I just couldn't speak, and I just got more and more tense. Before I went in, the only subject I didn't want to talk to Bhante about was art. I thought, if he finds out I've done a fine art degree, I'm in deep water, because I'm not very good at remembering people's names generally, not good at remembering the names of artists, of art movements. I know what I like, but I quickly sort of will forget what the image was, or won't. If you try and have a conversation with me about art, it won't work, basically. And I thought, I do not want to get into art with Bhante. This would just be so embarrassing if he finds I've done a fine art degree and then he sees me kind of, you know, not having a clue what I'm talking about. So I was in there quite nervous. I kept trying to, I'm sure, you know, I mean, Bhante's very good. He very quickly will put you at ease, and he'll sort of, you know, he'll ask you how you are, he'll ask you what you've been reading. He might ask you how the centre is, how Jinnu Raja was. But again, I was just really tense. I just couldn't quite seem to meet him. And my main memory of the meeting was that of Bhante sitting in his chair opposite me. So the photograph in the dining room, as you go into the dining room, in sort of that corner, that wall, there's a photograph by Aloka Vera, a fantastic photograph of Bhante in his study at Majjhima Loka. So you can see the chair where I had a breakdown in that picture. So Bhante was sitting in his chair, and my memory was just that he kept just looking right at me. And I didn't know what to do. He was just staring. Well, he wasn't staring at me. I mean, it's partly because his eyesight's not great. But he just sat, just looking at me. And I was nervous already, and I just didn't know what to do. I thought, do I hold his gaze? Do I smile gormlessly back at him? I just didn't know what to do. Sometimes I would try and pretend he wasn't looking at me, and sort of look at the window outside, pretending I was watching the birds, and I'd look back. And he'd still be sitting there staring. Right? And I was just getting more and more tense. But what happened was, I began to feel that I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. If you cook rice or potatoes that are dirty and you haven't cleaned them, what happens is all this brown scum gathers at the top of the pan. So I just felt my whole being was made of brown scum. That was just what happened. I just felt like I was this brown, scummy being. And I don't mean that in any sort of, like, you know, that I felt unworthy or any kind of low self-esteem sort of dialogue. That was just a visceral experience. I just felt like brown scum. But I think it was partly because I was quite receptive to Bhante. But what happened was, I just became terrified. And I sort of reflected later that my experience was that I was in the presence of someone incredibly pure. And this purity just seemed to drag up this darkness, this frothy foulness. I mean, that was what I made, that's how I sort of made sense of it later. But I don't think, you know, I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, this man is so pure. I was just aware of my own limitations very viscerally, very clearly. And it was quite unpleasant to be in the presence of Bhante on that occasion, in a way, due to my own filth. Much as I have tried to avoid the topic of art, of course we got onto the topic of art, because Bante of course asked me why did I end up in Nottingham, and I had to answer to do a fine art degree. So again, I quickly got into deep water there. We somehow got onto the subject of John Ruskin and his book, The Elements of Drawing. So John Ruskin was an art critic and a great supporter of Turner and the Pre-Raphaelites. That's all I know about John Ruskin, pretty much. He's an incredibly good draftsman. And I saw a fantastic exhibition of him, Turner and the Pre-Raphaelites, at Tate Britain years ago, maybe in 2000 or something. But somehow I ended up talking about the elements of drawing, and I was just so desperately trying to reverse out of this conversation with Bante, because I just thought he's going to be bemused as to why someone who did a fine art degree could be so inarticulate about the subject that they studied for 3 years. That was one meeting with Bante. I did have another meeting with him after ordination that I, just to balance it a bit, I'll just briefly tell you about. I had a much better meeting with him. It was a meeting I thought I was going to have the first time. I suppose I was just a lot, again, I think the meeting was good because I was a lot more relaxed. I don't put the first meeting down to, you know, to Bante. It was because the second meeting I was a lot more relaxed. I thought we had a very good communication, not about anything particularly in depth, of course, but just something about being ordained and being around Bante, which I'll say something about a bit later. But we spoke briefly about my sadhana practice, which I felt was very important. And again, I wasn't looking for some big sort of, I just had a query about sadhana that I asked him about, and he responded. But you know, it's fantastic the way Bante responds sometimes. It's so sort of plain and matter of fact, but very, very sort of, very deep in a way. I'm quietly using that word deep, it's a bit trite, but it felt, you know, very strong, very sort of, very wonderful response in a way. So I was very glad of that I had this sort of better communication with him after my first attempt. I'll come back a little bit to being around Bante and being ordained shortly. So I'll just talk a bit now about just different ways that I've built up a relationship with Bante, which might be helpful for some of you. So it's particularly ways in which Bante has been evoked for me, I suppose. I think the first way, stories from his disciples. So stories from his personal disciples. I just love to hear people who have had contact with Bante talking about that. Even anyone who's had any contact with Bante, I want to hear about it. I want to know what happened. What did he say? How did you feel? You know, what was going on? I just any opportunity to sort of fill in any gap around my understanding of Bante, I'm quite eager to hear of people's meetings with Bante. Particularly, I think, well, like I say, anyone, but particularly people who were ordained by him and have spent a little bit more time with him. I used to enjoy hearing Jinawaja's experiences of some of the meetings he had with him in Moseley. Paramartha's snippets of living with Bante on a daily basis. Padmavajra's fascinating evocations of Bante. And even supporting the Gukyaloka course last year, hearing Maitreya Bandhu's sort of lovely little stories of living in Sakavati with when Bante was living at the London Buddhist Centre, and these very humorous stories and very kind of interesting communications from Bante. So that feels very, very important to hear Bante's disciples talking about him. And particularly, of course, here in Abaya the other day, just lovely to hear, because I haven't heard an awful lot from before 1974. So it was lovely to hear Abaya talk about these early years, you know, way before I was born, of being around Bante, before there was even any order. I was just fascinated by that. It's just lovely. And I think it's partly because when someone communicates about Bante, it's important for them. They will tell of stories about Bante that they've remembered. People have probably had lots of communications with Bante, but they'll tell the stories that were particular to them that sort of had an effect on them. So that's what I really like, these very particular stories that people are willing to share. So that's one stories from his disciples. Secondly, a way I've sort of contacted Bante is through reading his memoirs. I'll often read Bante's memoirs, particularly on solitary retreat. And I did at Gukyaloka last year as well. So it's very engaging to be, particularly on solitude, to be immersed in Bante's system of practice, to be living that out, trying to do it, you know, every day going through the system of meditation, practicing Bante's Dharma every day and reading about the man, where this came from. I just find that feels very different to just reading Bante's memoirs, when not on retreat or when not immersed in practice. And I even feel closer to Bante in a way when my mind is a bit more refined and more clear than it usually is when I'm on retreat. Because I think Bante's mind is obviously a lot more kind of clearer and more subtle than mine. So when I can get a little bit more clear and a bit more subtle, so to speak, myself as we do on retreat, I feel that the autobiographies could communicate quite a lot more than I would normally be aware of. Particularly reading about the Rainbow Road, about his life in India. I mean, I find that just fascinating. Just his childhood, you know, just hearing about his memories of his childhood and how he just seemed very equanimous before he even met the Dharma formally, so to speak. He just seemed very equanimous about the things that would happen to him and very sort of, you know, avidly wanting to, you know, almost wearing his parents down with trips to Tooting Library to fetch more books for him. Particularly his sort of search for the Dharma in India. Obviously he'd already come across the Dharma, but I just love this, how he spent a lot of time with these sort of Hindu teachers, but he just knew that that wasn't the Dharma. He knew that wasn't what he was looking for, although he was sometimes more impressed with these Hindu teachers than some of the Buddhist monks that he would come across. So yeah, very interesting. Thirdly, a way of contacting Bante is reading his seminars. So I find this incredibly helpful to see how Bante communicates the Dharma. And I think it's in his seminars, more than anywhere else, you get a taste of Bante and what it is he's trying to communicate. So Bante said that if you do a talk, I can't quite remember how he says it, but he said something like, if you do a talk to 100 people, you're bound to sort of dilute the communication because there's 100 different people that you're trying to contact. If you do a talk to 10 people, it can be a bit more focused. If you're talking one-on-one to someone, you know this person, you know what their needs are. You know, if there's a communication in particular, you can have a much better discussion. And I think you can get this in the seminars when people ask questions about the topic that they're studying. You can see Bante really trying to really expound in the Dharma, really taking in what they've said, responding to that with the Dharmic perspective, and responding to that with how that relates to the text. So, and just very interesting to see how he unpicks people's assumptions. Someone will ask a very kind of clever question, and Bante will just take them to pieces. You know, he'll just sort of say, well, what do you mean by that? And I just find that really very, very sort of interesting in a way. I think through these conversations and his elucidations of the Dharma in that context, I have a real sense of why Bante has this connection with Saint Jerome. So in his his I don't know if he gave it as a talk or if it was just a talk Saint Jerome Revisited, so I can, which is in the Priceless Jewel, is it? But I can really see how Bante has this connection with Saint Jerome as a translator for Bante of the Dharma. So that's seminars. So I'm going to, fourthly, I'll touch on something that Mahamati mentioned yesterday, but I'd like to go into it as well. Again, no apologies for repeating a little bit. So listening to Bante's lectures. I think it's vital to listen to Bante's lectures. I think, just to clarify, I'm not criticising any of the spoken word projects and the books that are around that have come from the talks, but you know, they're incredibly good. But I would urge you to go back to the seminar, to the actual talks. I think quite a bit is missed out, even in reading just a straight transcript of a talk, never mind a sort of an edited version. So I'd say that particularly for those of you who are doing the Mitta study course, if you're looking at one of the modules, ask your Mitta study leader, what lectures do I need to be looking at for this? Or if you're studying the Bodhisattva Ideal, I mean, I'd say really just listen to the lectures. But if that's, I mean, they're usually about an hour and a half long, but if that's a bit much, then, just maybe read a couple of the chapters and then read and then listen to a lecture as well. So you can sort of dip in and out of the book and the lecture. But I'd really try and sort of urge you, to use the opportunity to hear Bante, hear exactly what it is he is saying. And I was thinking that, I was very struck reading the seven papers by Subhuti and Bante, and particularly Subhuti's System of Dharma Life talks that he gave here a few years ago. I found it incredibly helpful, those papers and the lectures by Subhuti. But I think that was partly because myself and others here, when we did Mitta study, basically the Mitta study course was listening to Bante's lectures. So every week, someone would have the tape that you'd get from Dharma Chakra, and every week there'd be a said person would make sort of a few copies of the tape to hand out to the Mitta study group, and you'd listen to Bante's lectures. But I think doing that over the years, you get a really good broad sense of Bante's teachings, and I just felt quite clear that having that broad background awareness of Bante's teachings, I then found it really helpful when Subhuti gave his talks, and even lots of the communications that Subhuti's done more recently, I think come from communications with Bante. But I found it very, very helpful to just have this good, broad background of understanding of Bante's teaching. Because in a way, I think to understand Bante, you have to read, listen quite broadly. There's no concise, pithy little text that has all the answers. Bante's not interested in that. Bante's interested in creating a dharmic culture, a living, breathing dharmic culture, whereby the seeds of the Dharma can be planted and will flower. And I feel personally that he's done that, he's doing that. And I feel that will, well, I hope, I can't say that will continue. So I think as much as you can, just go back to the old lecture series and sort of build up a bit of a sense of Bante's whole width and breadth of teaching, because there's a lot there, and he covers so many topics, so many subjects. And it will really help you make sense of what it is, why he's talking, why he's clarifying certain subjects, topics now in terms of the seven papers. The seven papers will make a lot more sense if you've got this broader background understanding of Bante. Fifthly, watching videos of him. So I remember I was doing a night on Bante a few years ago at the Nottingham Buddhist Centre, and I collated quite a few different videos of Bante's life from as early as I could get up till much more recently. And I remember there was myself, Sangha Ketu Artabandi. I'm not sure if Jinawaja was there or if he'd left, but I had the projector set up and we were sitting. I mean, this sort of edited thing of section of videos went on for maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. And I remember us order members sitting there at this class, just, you know, laughing at every joke and just really sort of taking in what Bante was saying. And I remember the rest of the class who didn't really know Bante, we're just sort of wondering what on earth was going on, because we were just, you know, just so amazed in everything that Bante was saying. But again, I think that's just another little way that you can have a sense of Bante. So you've got the talks, you can hear him. If you've got video, you can see him as well. Particularly, just wanted to mention one, is 15 points for old and new order members. I can never remember if it's old and new or new and old, because I know there's two talks, but one of them, 15 points for old or new order members. It's just wonderful. It's just, you really see Bante. He seems full of energy. He's talking to the order, and he's really, you know, very clear and very strongly. So some of the points are quite brief and very strong, and you really get a sense of he's really trying to communicate something. And just seeing him sort of looking into the audience, and yeah, just communicating. I find it very strong. Okay. Sixthly, a way to get to know Bante is by wholeheartedly studying and practicing his Dharma. I think I felt closest to Bante by following his instructions on how to go for refuge, how to deepen one's going for refuge. And the more I practice, the more I see why he has emphasized certain things more than others, why he's emphasized spiritual friendship or the importance of the arts. So when through my own experience, seeing why he's done that, why he's emphasized these things, I feel closer to him. And it's almost because I can resonate with why he's seen that as important, because I've clarified that this is important, and I've seen why it's important. So I think I have a sense of being quite close to Bante's thinking in a way, and to Bante's vision of the Dharma when having sort of insights with a small eye into why he's emphasising some things more than others. I can have a sense, he just seems to fill out a lot more when one is connecting with that. So yeah, practicing his Dharma, and just, you know, just immersing yourselves in the going for refuge process, you know, here and at home. This is something that Bante is obviously in agreement with, the way we're doing things in the movement, in terms of the ordination process. So that's a way of getting to know Bante and Bante's vision and Bante's thinking, and why, and you know, why he does things the way he has. And it's almost like when you wrap all these things together, you know, his meetings in India with people, his, you know, his seminars, his communications of the Dharma, and to the ordination process as we now have it, you really do get a sense of Bante and what it is he's trying to communicate from a direct personal experience. And just lastly on this, on these points, a good way of getting to know Bante is by being ordained. So if you want to get to know Bante, get ordained. So being ordained into the order that he's founded. After ordination, I had a much more vivid sense of Bante. I felt more grateful to him than ever. And I felt clear about his teaching, and again closer to the heart of his vision of the Dharma. I took some mitras to see him, as I mentioned earlier, after ordination. And my experience of being around Bante after ordination was very different to being around him before I was ordained, which maybe that's the thing with those two meetings I had with him, one when I was going a bit crazy and the other one which was, you know, very positive. So seeing him after ordination was a lot stronger. And I can't quite explain this, but it was almost this strange sense that I was somehow involved in the same work that Bante was involved in. And I don't know what that means. And I certainly, of course, don't mean putting myself on a level with Bante anywhere near that, just to clarify. But I felt involved in the same work that Bante was involved in. I can't quite say how, but there was a resonance with the man when he was sitting in the room. Was myself, these mitras from Nottingham, I'm sure most of them had asked for ordination, and there was Bante. And there was just a very different sense of Bante then. I mean, you know, we just had a very pleasant conversation, nothing too deep, just being around Bante. But I felt I was part of Bante's, I was part of what Bante was doing. Very, very keenly felt that. I think it was something to do with sort of Kalyana Mitta and the sense of, these mitras, and then there was me and there was Bante, and there was this sense of, the communication of the Dharma in some way. But at those meetings, particularly one where the last one I had of those meetings, I had a sense that almost that I had known Bante in an intimate way for many, many years. That was the sort of heartfelt sense that I knew this man quite intimately, as an intimate, close friend and companion for many years. That was, and I know that doesn't make sense on a certain level, but that was my experience of being around him then. There was something within me resonating with Bante. Okay, so that's the end of those points. I'm just going to talk about why I'm grateful to Bante. So I feel very confident that without Bante, I would not be a Buddhist. I feel very clear about that. I doubt very much that I would be practicing any form of spirituality at all. I think his emphasis on spiritual friendship and the order living out this ideal of spiritual friendship has saved my life in a way. When I came to the Nottingham Buddhist Centre in 1998, I had been previously meditating with another group. It wasn't a Buddhist group. It was a slightly strange mixture. It was sort of slightly theosophical, slightly Hindu-y, slightly Buddhist. It was a bit of a mixture. I'd been meditating with them since I was a student for about 3 years and practicing with them. And I had a sense that when I went into the Nottingham Buddhist Centre, I thought, if this doesn't work, really, I felt this very clearly, I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I thought, if this doesn't work, I'm going to forget it all. I'm just going to have a miserable, crappy life. I really thought that's what's going to happen. I thought, if I don't resonate with the teachings of the Buddha, the problem is definitely with me, you know, and I didn't want to spend the rest of my life skipping between crystal healing, colour therapy. Not that there's anything wrong with any of these things, but I just thought, if Buddhism doesn't do it for me, I'm just going to have to give up and have a kind of life of crime or whatever it might be. I was met in the Buddhist centre with great warmth and friendship, which I didn't even realise at the time. I thought for those first few years in the Nottingham Buddhist Centre that I was there because I had a special connection with the Dharma and I was a bit special myself. That's what I thought had kept me in there. But I was quite wrong. What drew me back time and time again was spending time with other men who were practicing the Dharma and were engaging in friendship. I felt like I was taken seriously for the first time in my life. And I remember one day walking into the evolution shop and into the office and stock rooms at the back. And I've got Abhaya Kirti and Amrita Sukha was working there for a little bit. And there was Vimala Prabha, who was then a Mogashura, who's resigned. But I just had a sense that I'd never met men with their feet on the ground. And I suppose these men just seem to have a presence or a sort of weight about them that I'd never seen anywhere else. And I don't feel that I was projecting. I was just struck by, there's something different about these guys. And I think that what that was, in hindsight, you could say that they were just trying to engage in skillful action. They were engaging in going for refuge. But I was very struck by that. And without the friendship of Abhaya Kirti, Vimala Prabha and Dayavadri in those early days, there's many, many more people who I'm very grateful to. But Abhaya Kirti, Vimala Prabha and Dayavadra, I would have soon got very bored with Buddhism and left. I only realised some years later that these men were living out Bhante's vision of the Dharma through basically, well, a lot of things, but it was basically Bhante's vision of Kalyanamitta that kept me at the Buddhist centre, that kept me practising. Had I gone to another Buddhist group, I know I would have got bored. There was a couple of other groups in Nottingham, but I know I just wouldn't have lasted very long. There would have been no way I could have, got my slightly wilder energies on board in another Buddhist context. I don't know because I haven't done it, but I'm putting my money quite strongly on the fact that I wouldn't have lasted very long. But I think it was particularly Bhante's vision of Kalyanamitta and the fact that there will be no going for refuge without the Kalyanamitta, without this flow of spiritual friendship, that it just won't, you know, it won't have a leg to stand on. Going for refuge will just fall flat on its face without Kalyanamitta. And I think that was Bhante's vision of that has kept me, that kept me contained in the movement, and it keeps me contained still. I feel that being part of the order and my brothers in the order saved me time and again from my own folly and selfishness. I feel time and again still that, you know, to talk of, you know, living at Padmaloka, that it's a community here at Padmaloka that keep my practice going. I was saying in the study group a couple of days ago that, and this is similar to what Mahamati was saying yesterday, he referenced we're carried along only if we put ourselves in the right place with the right attitude. But just part of being part of the order, being in a strong order context, and I feel that I have to make very little effort actually. And I don't mean that I kind of sit on my backside and let everyone else do the work, although I could probably do more work. But there's a real sense of being carried along by the sort of efforts of myself engaging with others. I feel there's a bigger volition and momentum present within the order that's certainly bigger than myself and my own efforts. And I don't think this is, as Mahamati mentioned, this is quite common. This is quite a common experience for order members to have. This isn't something sort of, in a way it is profound, but in a way it's, if you put yourself in the right conditions with the right attitude, this is what will happen. But I think that Bante, I'm always amazed how Bante knew these things. It's like, how did he know this is what was going to happen? How did he know to place this huge emphasis on spiritual friendship? He always seems to be kind of, I don't know, 10 paces ahead of everyone else in his vision of what's going to work and what isn't. Okay, so I'll finish now. Just to say, I mean, there's two points left, well, one point and an image. I feel like I have a very good connection with Bante, and I feel that I don't need to be telling lots of you in the room this, but I think a vivid, creative, full-blooded, pulsing connection with Bante is open to everyone. I think the less Bante is around, and before too long, you know, he won't be with us anymore. He'll die, and I think we need to more and more try and keep that connection alive, possibly in some of the ways that I've spoke about, and in other ways you could maybe come up with or look at in your groups or carry on doing whatever it is you're doing. But I think it's really important to fan the flames of a connection with Bante. I don't think we can take that connection for granted. Or as Mitu's have asked for ordination, I don't think you need to be just aware that, well, he founded the order and of course it's important, yeah. I think you need to have a creative, positive connection with Bante. Even if that's going to be difficult for some of you, even if you need to have conversations that you think might be awkward about Bante, I would really urge you to do that, because I think unless you have a clear relationship with Bante as a founder of the order and as your teacher, I think your going for refuge will be compromised. So I think it's really important to have a relationship with Bante, even if at this point that looks like a difficulty. I would urge you to talk to your friends about trying to creatively engage with that. So I'll just finish with an image. I think it's an image. So last year at an order weekend in Aristana, we celebrated Bante's birthday. So Bante, how old was he then? What? 90. So we celebrated Bante's 90th birthday. And depending on how he had slept, is that he was going to come and sit in on, I think it was a book launch by Sabuti. So Bante was just going to come in and sit in and be present. So I remember having my fingers crossed that he was going to sleep well. And thankfully he did, and he was able to come in. So we had a great order gathering. There was many, many order members there. It was fantastic. And Bante came in. I think it had started raining just before he came into the marquee. And Bante came in, he was helped in. Of course, you know, he's now very old and very frail and needed help to get from the car to his seat that had been made ready, so to speak. And Sabuti came up to the lectern and started talking for this book launch. at this point, a thunderous rainstorm started. So all you could hear was this rain crashing down on the marquee. And Subhuti had to almost shout sometimes to be heard over this rainstorm. I mean, I just thought this was fantastic. You got Bante, Subhuti, having to shout over this. But then as Subhuti carried on, whilst the rain was still coming down, huge shafts of sunlight started breaking through the clouds, which caused quite a number of rainbows to appear and quite a few people kind of jumping out with their phones and trying to photograph these rainbows. But I thought this was fantastic. It's got this rainstorm, the sun, these rainbows, the order, Bante. And Bante was presented with a birthday cake and a garland of flowers. And at the end of the celebrations, it would help if I can just say this. At the end of the celebrations, Bante was helped to his feet and started to leave the tent with, it was quite slippy at this point, so with a couple of people either side of him helping him out. And we all stood up and I just saw glimpses of this old man from the back in the distance receding away. As again, this rain and sunlight seemed to be still pouring down. And I burst into tears. And the words, "I owe this man my life," just seemed to erupts from within. Thank you.